another Yes to Life show, the weekly show looking into all aspects of integrative medicine for cancer. And when I say all aspects, I do mean the widest possible view of what supporting someone with cancer in regaining their health could look like. This is the very essence of integrative medicine, inclusivity, to create patient-centered care and patient choice. I'm Robin Daly, chairman and founder of the charity Yes to Life, helping people with cancer to access the many benefits of integrative medicine. These are severely troubled times, times of division, intolerance, and increasing polarization of views. Our thoughts at Yes to Life are very much with the many, many people that have been directly or indirectly affected by all the recent tragic events. Now is the time for communities to pull together, to find common ground, to expose the foundations of intolerance, and to listen to one another in order to reverse the rushing tide towards polar opposites. Polarization has long been a feature in healthcare too. Orthodox versus alternative, evidence-based versus non-evidenced, technical versus holistic, the list goes on. And one thing is for certain, the division and inevitable conflict is very damaging for patients desperately seeking to find ways back to health. As in every walk of life, in healthcare, we need dialogue and collaboration for the benefit of patients as well as for those working in healthcare. In this week's show, I shall be investigating the whole arena of what is increasingly referred to as wellness or well-being, a catch-all term that extends health to include the psychological, emotional, and spiritual arenas of life, in short, to encompass the totality of the human experience. Paul Homaki is a chiropractor with a passion for wellness and the promotion of good health through lifestyle choices. I'm speaking to Paul at his practice in Scotland. Hi, Paul. Thanks very much for joining us today, and it's great to talk to you again.
Oh, hi, Robin. Thanks very much for having me. It's a real pleasure to be on your show.
Great. Well, I met you when I spoke at the Creating Wellness event in Edinburgh this year. This was a very broad-based event about promoting health and well-being through a variety of channels and about empowering individuals to help themselves. In the UK, we're besieged right now by serious chronic conditions from Alzheimer's to heart disease and, of course, the subject of this show, cancer. Lifestyle medicine would be described in some quarters as, at best, a nice to have. But what makes you think that lifestyle approaches can succeed where conventional medicine's failed?
Well, Robin, that's an excellent question. And to answer it, first of all, I just want to give you a little bit of background because At this point in my career, I've been actually practicing chiropractor now for 20 years, mm-hmm. and seen really hundreds of thousands of patient visits. We meet patients at every stage of their health. Many times we find that individuals come to see us often having lost their health to a certain point before really generating an interest in regaining it. And it's out of meeting people at these various stages that I developed a passion for public and patient education and really helping to open up the opportunities to live a more full life and to restrict the amount of suffering that comes from poor health. So over the years, I've actually learned that in some ways, health doesn't seem to come into our vocabulary until we've experienced some kind of illness, or either directly through our own lives or indirectly through those that we care and love for. Mm. So recognizing this, I've actually started to recognize that, yes, it's okay to learn at every stage of the game. It's okay to start to learn and start to ask questions in the light of a personal or a family health issue. But I just would love to share the message and to generate an interest not only in a reactive approach, but in learning about the positive benefits of pursuing better health. And this is where we developed our 8-part model for creating wellness. Each of these elements of wellness is something that everybody can pursue in their own life. And there are real tangible benefits. It's not just an approach to avoiding illness. It's actually an approach to moving towards a better life.
Mm-hmm. Great. So a very proactive approach. I'm keen to talk to you about your 8-point plan there a bit later on. So we'll come back to that.
Great.
So we've got the curious situation currently in the UK where complementary medicine in all its forms is constantly under attack from sceptics who claim to be flying the flag for science and for protecting vulnerable patients, and for whom events such as the Creating Wellness event would be categorised as anything from fanciful to downright dangerous. And yet, your keynote speaker was GP Andrew Murray, who is the physical activity champion for the Scottish Government and hugely enthusiastic about your event. So, as in other walks of life, and notably right now, of course, society has become increasingly polarised, and that polarisation is actually, I think, bad for us all. At Yes to Life, we support patient choice, whether for conventional or unconventional medicine, and we support integration, which could be described as the ending of hostilities and a willingness to talk. So I'm just interested to hear your take on integrative medicine.
Right. Well, it's a very important topic, and one which has it's a conversation that we need to be having publicly. And again, this conversation should not simply just be for those people who have experienced the system and realize that they're not given a full range of options through a traditional approach. But it should actually be something that we need to be asking these questions throughout our life. These are questions we should be addressing with our children and with our loved ones at home, so that if in the future we ever do have to confront illness for ourselves or a family member, that we've already explored these questions and we've already thought them through and done the research actually as well, which is very important. In answer to your question, I believe that we need to, in what we would call complementary care, which I'm assuming is everything other than medicine, we need to actually recognize that our research is equally valid to that being performed through the medical channels. And there is a plethora of research done on lifestyle-based medicine. We can look at everything from simply just increasing our fruit and vegetable intake on a daily basis, and the very strong links are made between that and helping to reduce incidence of cancer. We can look at habits, whether it be smoking, of course, is widely understood through research to be linked with cancer, or obesity as well, and exercise-based medicine. So the research actually is there, and I believe that those that are that take exception to any kind of non-traditional approaches or may have not fully explored the research, or may somehow not regard it as important or equally valid to that done through other means, through more medical based backgrounds. It's not widely understood that only a fraction of our research is actually done independently. And when we look at the type of articles that are published in medical journals, you can actually see these articles are often supported and even funded through drug companies, which is sometimes a little bit surprising. But when we recognize that the research is actually often done about drugs, then it becomes more clear that, of course, the agenda very much is to approach healthcare from a pharmaceutical approach as opposed to a lifestyle-based approach.
Mm. So do you think there are benefits to be had from integrating these two types of approach? I mean, the drug-based approach, of course, it has validity and is very useful in many circumstances. But with integration, we're talking about adding in from complementary medicine. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think that's very important. And there are different schools of thought within complementary care. I think even using the term complementary medicine is it's important for us. Our vocabulary is very important. Mm. There are those that tend to use the term alternative medicine. I, for one, am not a huge supporter of this kind of terminology, because it implies that either we're taking a medical approach or we're taking something else, which is then therefore seen as alternative to medicine. And I do agree with you that we should be seeing these as somehow working together. For example, there's no reason why a patient who is undertaking radiotherapy for treatments of cancer couldn't also be taking an approach with improving their social support networks and reaching out to those that can offer them that support. It's a very valid thing for someone who's taking a surgery to also be taking a nutrition and rest-based approach. So I think common sense says that yes, these we should be working together on it. And one of the first things we should do is recognize that we shouldn't be polarizing our views, saying that either we're going to be taking a medical approach or this alternative medicine. But yes, looking at them and not only looking at lifestyle-based approaches as the complementary to medicine, but it may actually well be the other way around. It may be that the lifestyle approaches and the healing power of the body is the primary healer, and that in fact drugs and surgery are in some sense there complementing. You know, we can turn that around the other way as well. It just depends on your perspective.
Right. Interesting. Okay, so you're a chiropractor, and as such, you've got a clear interest in promoting well-being. But your interests go a lot further than you might expect from a chiropractor. The initiative for the Creating Wellness event came from you, and you're clearly a driven man when it comes to the subject of health. So why do you become so interested in complementary healthcare in the first place, and what makes you so passionate about it?
Well, The truth is that when I started in my career as a chiropractor, I had a very keen interest, and I still do, in the performance of the spine and the central nervous system in health and healing. And it is true that we find that our patients who often come to see us with particular problems related to their spine, whether it be acute back pain or cluster headaches and migraines, there's many different health conditions related to the spine. And yet in giving recommendations to our patients for this, we often found that they were coming back reporting other health benefits as well, whether that be with sleeping better, whether that be that they found that they were having more energy, that they recovered more quickly from illness. And I was fascinated actually to take this further and to do more research into it. And in fact, through our patient interactions, we've involved our patients in some research here within our centres in Edinburgh and in the Scottish Borders. And we've had some fantastic results with looking at this type of approach, to the point that now people, our patients are coming to see us, not necessarily only with spine problems, but also very interested in improving their energy, very interested in strengthening their immune system, and certainly in helping to prevent illness and disease. So yes, that's developed over the course of the last 20 years, really, as a gradual transition from being interested primarily in the spine to now recognizing that any health change, any positive change that we make in our life has a positive impact on every other part of our health. Very much supporting the holistic approach that it's impossible to affect one parts of the body without also affecting and the rest as well.
Well, it's interesting you mention that, but of course the orthodox medicine has tended towards compartmentalization, both in terms of parts of the body and disciplines and everything, and so disease is very much approached in this way. And so when there's an indication that something has a much wider effect than the actual one they're targeting, that's generally not of great interest or even dismissed. You know, they're looking for one treatment for one condition in one part of the body. So this is a different way of looking at things, isn't it? This connectedness of everything.
I wouldn't necessarily say that it's completely different, because as a matter of fact, this way of seeing the body has existed really for many thousands of years. It's almost that we've taken a different perspective within the last century. So the way that we look at health has become more compartmentalized, whereas over the course of history, we actually have seen the body as one. And certainly the interconnectedness of the body could be seen in the healthcare systems all around the world, from the Chinese system, where we look at the meridians and how they interact with the body. We can look at Ayurveda through the Indian approach, which also sees the body as a system of interconnected functions. And even within North American Native medicine and even traditionally within the UK, we can see this happen in the past. So I would say that we're dealing with a new approach to seeing the body. Maybe we can sometimes compare reductionistic approaches to holistic. And yes, I would say, yeah, perhaps we're taking more of a reductionistic approach in these days.
Right. Okay. Now, you mentioned at the outset that people really need some kind of personal experience or close experience of health issues to become really interested in health. And I'm really interested to know, well, what was it for you that made you become so interested in health?
Well, for me, Robin, my experience was much like that of literally millions of other people across the world. It was a close family member who was diagnosed with cancer, and for me, it was when I was only a child. So, having grown up with that, I was very much aware of medical approaches to managing cancer. It was breast cancer, as a matter of fact. I often visited my mother in hospital while she was having her chemotherapy treatments, and of course I saw the effects of that on her body and on her mind, and I think that could be very impactful on a child when they're growing, as much as it can be on anyone. But experiencing that, I realized that was something that I didn't want to see anybody else suffer. I never wanted to have anybody else, especially children, to experience that. And it started for me a lifelong passion in health, in terms of promoting ways to avoid this, promoting ways to strengthen the body naturally. And this led me down my path to a career in chiropractic, yes, as a clinic director, but also in my approach to wellness, which, as you mentioned, has become a new passion for me, and still very much is.
All right. Thank you very much for telling us about that. It's always just really interesting to see what makes people tick. And, of course, it's, as you say, it's like so many of us. This is a response to really a very difficult circumstances that you were facing in your family.
Well, I was one of the lucky ones who... I didn't have to experience this personally with my own health, but I had the opportunity to learn from experiences that I've been through, that others around me had been through. And I do tend to think that, yes, we have to see it for what it is. We have to know what the effects of chemotherapy and surgery are on the body before we start asking questions as to what else is available as well. What else can we do to help ourselves? Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so I want to come back now to your 8 wellness elements that you identified for your Creating Wellness event. Would you like to say what these are and why you think they're so foundational to health and well-being?
Yes. Well, this is a passion of mine, as I've mentioned, and when we talk about creating wellness and the wellness elements, really what we're talking about is the requirements of our bodies, our living bodies, in order to function fully and at their best. So we're not talking about an extra boost or some sort of way of cheating nature or illness. No, we're actually talking about simply supplying and providing our bodies and our minds with those elements that we require to function normally. And my experience and research has shown that when we live our lives apart from these elements, we become more vulnerable to disease. Recognizing what we need is really a vital first step to providing it. And so this is one of the reasons behind creating wellness and our new approach.
Okay.
So wellness is a dynamic process of becoming aware of and making proactive choices towards a healthy life. The first step is the awareness. And these eight wellness elements help us to understand our body and our health. So in no particular order, the eight creating wellness elements are movement and breathing, nutrition and hydration, our relationships and social health and well-being, our power of choice and personal empowerment, our outlook and attitude towards what's happening around us in our life, our rest and quality of sleep, our environment and how healthy our environment is around us, and finally but not least is living with a sense of purpose in our life. And all eight of these elements are equally important. I would not put one above the other, but say that they're all essential for us, absolutely.
Well, very interesting. I mean, one of the things that immediately strikes me about them is that a significant proportion, at least half, if not maybe more, are not really practical things. Some of the things are, you know, nutrition and hydration are obviously very practical, but at least half of them are kind of much more in the realm of the psychological and emotional life. Do you want to say anything about that?
Well, absolutely. When I'm asked to speak, I often talk about the relationship between the mind and the body. I find very often that we see a lot of interest in mind-body, and sometimes the word spirit is in the mix as well there, and we can look at that. But the relationships between the mind and the body is so strong that the two can't be separated.
Right.
Of course, we can ask that question, you know, what part of the mind isn't in the body? And naturally, of course, our mind is part of our body. So when we're looking after ourselves mentally and psychologically, everything that impacts us mentally and psychologically also impacts us physically. When we have supportive relationships in our lives, when we have others around us who can support us, it actually can change the neurotransmitter function in our brain. It changes the way that we our immune systems work as well. You find that when we're given the power of choice in our lives, when we feel that decisions that we make actually make a difference to our health, it seems that our immune systems become stronger for that as well. We actually recover more readily from illness when we feel we're given the choice. So I would go as far as to say that there is some sort of mysterious link between the mind and the body, as has maybe previously been suggested. But instead of simply saying there's a link between the two, we're probably more accurate in saying that actually they're one and the same thing.
Well, that's a very interesting perspective, which I would agree with. So in reality, then, talking about the relationship between the mind and the body is a bit of a red herring, because you can't have a relationship between two things that are the same thing. So it opens up a whole new way of looking at things, which are psychological, emotional, spiritual approaches, as to how they contribute to our well-being, to our health.
Mm-hmm. We can't address a physical element in our lives without having it make an impact on us mentally and emotionally. And vice versa, we can't change our mind about something and not have it impact on us physically. And when we start to recognize this, and when this becomes the normal conversation that all kind of health professionals are having with their patients and clients, when this conversation is being had, then we're going to start to make some real advances forward. What tends to happen, and I've observed this in many health systems, is that we have those that specialize in areas of mental health, and actually have specific training for this area, but not in the realm of the physical health or not specifically. And then, of course, there are those that deal with only, say, for example, diet, or they're only looking at physical function of joints and to the exclusion of the mental. So I do tend to think that if we encourage health professionals to take a wider interest in the impact of our, at least to start with, the impact of our physical well-being on our mental health, then we can start to relate to patients as a whole person and not simply just as this physical element of the disease, if you know what I mean.
Mm. Very much so. Yeah, I think it's very interesting. It's another another example of compartmentalization, isn't it? That your spiritual well-being, they're seen as a separate discipline. But I think you're more accurate in saying that, they're all a part of us and we are a whole, in fact.
Absolutely. And, you know, we are amazing and beautiful creations as well. We are not riddled with problems. We're not ticking time bombs waiting to go off. Our bodies are a miracle of creation.
Indeed.
And if we can start to look at it like that, you know, we can start to see that our bodies and our minds are somehow amazing beyond our comprehension. And we can start to trust that. We can start to trust that actually when we let nature take its course and when we actually provide the body with what nature requires, we can see incredible advances in our health and well-being mentally as well as physically.
Mm. It's a very different view, isn't it? Actually fueling the body to do its own thing, because its own thing is actually completely trustworthy. Its own processes are all the time to make us as healthy and as well in every way as it can.
Well, absolutely. The very genetics of our body are designed so that we could survive in adverse circumstances. But naturally, we perform at our best in favorable circumstances. I mean, if you think about the behavior of any animal in starvation, it will act very differently than an animal would when it's provided with what it requires. I have a house cat at home, and mm-hmm. I know that my cat acts very differently when it's not been fed for a couple of days.
Right.
We also act differently, and at the level of genetics, some of our genetics is actually there to protect us, to actually promote different behaviors and different body physiology, and even this impacts on us mentally as well. Our minds perform differently when we are not in a favorable environment. That doesn't necessarily imply that genetics are the cause of disease, but rather that our genetics are somehow trying to help us survive despite the disease and help us to overcome it. So it's my understanding that we need to work with the genetics of the body and to create an environment that we were genetically designed for, as opposed to somehow blaming the genetics for our health.
Right. Yeah, that is kind of the current vogue, isn't it? Okay, so one of the things that's slowly emerging from the growing health disaster of our times is that although chronic disease manifests in many different ways in different people, the various chronic diseases themselves do share some of the same root causes. Do you want to say a bit about this and how it all ties back to lifestyle medicine?
Yes, well, I think, first of all, I should say that as a chiropractor, that my training is specifically in spinal health and well-being, although my experience over 20 years has helped me to have many opportunities to meet many thousands of people in all different stages of their health. And certain traits and commonalities do seem to emerge. And these days, actually, we're looking at one particular condition as linked in with almost every single chronic illness. And I'm fascinated by this, and actually increasingly I'm finding myself consumed with reading research on this. And I think the word is stress. Mm. And we can start to look at stress itself in its many complexities as linked with illness, with all forms of illness, but particularly chronic illness. And the impact of it is certainly not debatable. We do know that stress has a very clear negative impact on our immune system performance. Stress suppresses absorption across the gut. We find that stress reduces our nutritional complement. Of course, stress affects our mental function as well. We find it harder to make the right choices when we're experiencing stress. And ironically, a lot of that stress can actually be about our health. Mm. We find that recent surveys have found that a majority of people who suffer from stress saying that their health is one of their main sources of stress. So certainly helping to empower individuals to know that they can make the right choices and therefore can overcome this kind of negative impact on our lives, I believe will actually be the starting point for reversing the trend in chronic illness. We need to do more research into stress and obviously have practical ways for us to address that in our lives.
Mm. Thanks for pointing towards that. That's you're right. Of course, people's lives are increasingly stressful. Everybody acknowledges that's the case. And it's also the case that, of course, our health is getting a lot worse generally. And I think there's a growing understanding that it's not a coincidence and that the stress is actually foundational to our well-being. Well, a lack of stress, if you like, is foundational to our well-being.
That's right. And when we talk about stress, we're not simply talking about a psychological stress. This is part of it, but we can also talk about physiological stress.
Right.
Which essentially is putting our bodies and our minds in an environment that we're not adapted to. For example, instead of eating food, we're eating chemicals, and this creates a physiological stress on the system. It could be stressful simply just being in an urban environment without ever seeing running water or trees and green things in our life. So there's many different ways to look at physiological stress, but moving away from that and learning about how we can do that is essential. And really the eight Creating Wellness elements are all about that. It's about how to rebalance our lives through choices that each of us can make.
Mm. And of course it's important to differentiate between chronic stress and stress which is just a response to a dangerous or difficult situation.
Of course, because when we look at acute stressful situations, whether that be acute anxiety because of, say, for example, the pre-exam stress type of thing, or you know, I've got my driving test coming up, or you can look at acute cases of, for example, bereavement,
yes,
which is a very normal type of experience that everybody is going to have to go through in their lives. These aren't necessarily forms of illness. We don't need to be treating these as illness. We need to recognize actually that as long as our bodies are performing as they should, then we have the ability to overcome these kind of acute stresses. This is part of living a normal, healthy life. But when we talk about chronic stress, this is very different. Chronic stress can only exist in an environment where one of two things is happening. Either we are in chronic stress because our bodies are actually incapable of managing and handling that situation, or it's the chronic stress is causing us illness because the stressors themselves are more than we can handle.
Mm.
And so those two different perspectives, either an inability of our body to manage that stress because we're not meeting the body's needs, or that we are in an environment which is overpowering and we cannot survive in that environment. And these are the, I think, the main issues we should be looking at with research.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So as a chiropractor, you're clearly not treating anyone for cancer, but I believe you do have experience of treating people with cancer as well as many other chronic diseases. What benefits do you think that you can offer to people with cancer?
Well, that's a good question, and I agree with you that you know, the approaches that we take here in at Health for Life and managing all patients is that we have to, first of all, look at people as people, and we have these physiological stresses all around us. This is what's happening, but each of us also has a spine and a central nervous system. And when you come to a chiropractor, what we're primarily interested in, first of all, is making sure that your spine is performing at its best. Now, in many ways, the spine can be seen as a link to the rest of the body, both in terms of posture and stability. So the spine helps to support the weight of the body, and it has to perform at its best for that. But also the spine acts as a protective mechanism for your spinal cord and the spinal nerves that branch off. And so it's easy to understand that functional problems with the spine can have an impact on the nerve function as well.
Yeah.
And so we start at that point. And at Health for Life, every single patient gets a full orthopedic examination and a neurological exam so that we can look at the physical performance of the muscles, joints, and nerves. And this then goes on to impact the function of the rest of the body as well.
Mm, okay. So lastly, I'd like to just ask you a little bit about the event and ongoing. So you're Creating Wellness. It was a new event. Were you pleased with what it achieved this year? And do you got some plans for the future?
Yes, it was very exciting, actually. We had a great event in Dynamic Earth in Edinburgh in the 8th of April, earlier this year in 2017. And of course, we had some fabulous speakers, including yourself, Robin. Thank you very much for speaking at this event for us.
My pleasure.
In fact, your presentation was fascinating, and I found that the elements that you approached, the way that you approached this topic, is very much in line with our Creating Wellness philosophy, which is seeing us as creators in our own life, and that each individual has an opportunity to impact their lives positively if we're prepared to make that choice. That's not necessarily saying that everybody can be in perfect health, but that everyone has the opportunity to improve their health. Mm. And in doing so, we can improve our quality of life, and obviously that's going to have a positive impact on our well-being as well. So it was a real pleasure to hear from presenters like Dr. Andrew Murray, of course, and yourself. We had Ferial Puran, who was speaking on the topic of living your life with purpose, which we're very, very passionate about, and the impact of having a purpose to follow in your life often is what gives you motivation to take that extra step with your health. We had Tiffany Stewart, who is also a life coach, and she was, it was great to have the perspective of someone who's coming at it from the side of saying, you know, what can you do? What choices can you make in your life? So it was a very empowering event. We were very pleased to have that. We had Jason Varty, a physiotherapist, talking about sleep and the impact of proper rest and in recovery as well. So just a really great event. Next year, in May 2018, we're going to be doing it again, Dynamic
right.
Earth. So you can check it out. Yeah.
Okay, lovely.
So yeah, certainly if you're online, you can check at creatingwellness.org, and you'll find details of upcoming events and what's going on with us.
Mm. All right. Well, we can look forward to that, and I'll make sure the details are shared for everybody who's listening. So. I think we're going to end it there. Thanks very much for talking to us today. Big congratulations.
Oh, it's been a real pleasure, Robin. Thank
yeah,
you.
Big congratulations to you on the achievement of the 2017 event, and best wishes for next year's.
Well, certainly, and we do hope to see you there as well, Robin, for next year. So thank you very much for having me as a guest on your show, and it's been great to be here.
Well, Paul has clearly put a lot of thought into the whole subject of wellness or well-being, and his insights are, I think, really helpful. Details of next year's Creating Wellness event in Edinburgh and other resources mentioned in the show today are, as always, on the Yes to Life website at yestolife.org.uk. Look under Media Centre and then UK Health Radio. Upcoming events in the Yes Live calendar include a look at what Chinese medicine has to offer. That's this Thursday, the 29th, in Camden, London. And on the 5th of July, also in Camden, Sylvia Grisendi will be talking about food choices and cancer. Always a hot topic. Lastly, on the 15th of July, we have the next in our Lifestyle Choices and Cancer series of seminars. This one will be in Brighton, and our three great speakers will be Dr. Andre Young-Snell from the Vision of Hope Clinic, Dr. Britt Cordy speaking about the health benefits of wheatgrass, and four times cancer survivor Elaine Godley. If any of you are able to get to this seminar, it promises to be a very informative event, and I'd be really pleased to meet you there. And as a taster for the seminar, I'm delighted to be able to speak to Dr. Young-Snell in next week's Yes to Life show. So be sure to listen again. Goodbye.